This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, we were on the final day of our IBM convention here in Atlanta, Georgia, and the first thing I want to talk about, we're going to be talking with several people today, but last evening was the award ceremony. I should say we had not only had the ceremony, but also the stage contestants, the finalists and everything. And I want to announce just the winners. I say there are several people who had won several awards. And if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see a listing of all of the winners as far as runners-up, awards of merit, and stage and for close-up for youth and adults. But just to quickly announce, the people who had won first place in youth for the close-up was Anya Stein from Cape Town, South Africa. In adult for the close-up was Michael Blomke, B-L-O-E-M-E-K-E, from Raleigh, North Carolina. Congratulations, guys, over there for winning first place in the close-up. And then those two who had won in the stage contest was, again, Anya Stein for the youth from Cape Town, South Africa, who had won first place for the youth. And in the adult category was Artem Shunik. And I know I'm mispronouncing his name. And he's from Moscow, Russia. And also for the People's Choice Award, the winner was Artem Shunik from Moscow, Russia. And the most exciting part of this was, for the first time in, I don't know, over a decade, we finally have awarded, or more, I'm not sure when the last time it was that was awarded, and that was we gave away the gold medal, and that went also then to Artem Shunik of Moscow, Russia. Fantastic act. It was just one person. Well, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, with someone here today a little bit about the act. Boy, so much to unpack there. It's going to be so great. He has great potential, I think, for FISM then as well. Man, what an act, what an act. But first off here this morning, we're going to give you the conversation, or I should say the speech, given by Stuart McDonald at the Merlin breakfast this morning. And the Merlin breakfast is for those who have 25 years or more of consecutive membership within the IBM. And Stuart had agreed to allow me to record this about his journey to FISM. And so since we were talking a little bit about contests here, he is also going to be competing in FISM and has a very interesting speech that he gives to corporations. And he has an abbreviated version, which he is going to give us this morning and you will hear next. So I'm going to turn it over then to Sean Farquhar, who's past international president, as he introduces Stuart McDonald at our morning Merlin breakfast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my true pleasure to introduce our speaker for today. We met on a shuttle bus on the way to the Magic Castle in Hollywood, and I'd known of he and his wife and their accomplishments and all the stuff they'd done for years, and was stoked to meet them, and then had the opportunity to work a week at the castle watching as he was performing this act, and I said, this is a class act, and he said, his goal was to head to FISM. And in the last 6 or 7 years, I have watched the most amazing transformation. It's just spectacular. And here to talk about it, I won't give the title of it. You can do that. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and welcome to the stage, Stuart McDonald.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for inviting me to this prestigious event. It's really an honor. This lecture is called The Road to FISM. So I do this lecture at corporations, and so I download, and the lecture that I do for corporations is not called The Road to FISM. It's about how I fooled Penn and Teller using Lean and Continuous Improvement, which is a quality engineering term, Lean, Six Sigma. So anyway, I use these techniques on my road to FISM. And what you're seeing here is my my day job. My day job is I work at Whirlpool. And at the time of these pictures that they were taken, I was miserable. I was miserable in my job. Not because I hated Whirlpool, I just was like, I was lacking something. And I thought to myself, why am I feeling like this? And I thought, you know, I was most happy when I was a competitive magician. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could qualify to compete in FISM? So I got this crazy idea 6 months before the 2014 combined convention in St. Louis. And I started working on my act. Now, what you're seeing here is, if you go to Whirlpool's YouTube channel, service and support channel, I am their repairman. I don't know how to repair appliances, but nobody would be the guy in front of the camera. So I had some other guy holding the camera, and then I would do all of the repairs. I didn't know what I was doing. But anyway, that's why I was miserable. So there's a lot of slides here, so we're just going to kind of jump through them. So the next slide here is, Whirlpool taught me about lean and continuous improvement. And this is my timeline before I had used this technique. Now, this is from starting in, 1979, that I was like in the seventh or eighth grade. And then we go to January of 2000. Very little happened. The biggest event that happened to us, we were working pros. We were in the college market. We were doing 100 shows a season. For 10 years, we did 1,000 colleges. But the biggest thing that ever happened to us was getting on the Staff Brothers show. But then, Whirlpool put me through a program of lean and continuous improvement. So let's go to the next slide after using lean and continuous improvement. These are all of the major events that had happened along the way as I started from 2014 to 2019. And the biggest thing that happened was in 2017, I won the stage competition at the combined convention in St. Louis, not in St. Louis, in Louisville, Kentucky. And I won the SAM stage contest, and then I won the Originality Award, I won the People's Choice Award, I won just about everything, and I didn't even have that in my sights. I was only trying to qualify for FISM, and I did, but I did much more than that. So let's go to the next one. Let's go back to 2014, before I started this whole lean and continuous thing. I got this idea, and I go to the competition. 6 months of putting this act together. And what do I run into? The Korean tsunami. I basically face planted on stage. My dancing cane was all tangled up, and I thought, my act was terrible. It really was. And nobody would talk to me. My friends wouldn't talk to me. Lori would talk to me. But nobody would except one person, Gene Anderson. Gene Anderson took me aside. There he is. And he said, let's go have a beer. And he said, I want a story. He said, all these other guys, it's show off. It's a show off act. And he said, I want a story. So that's the seed that he planted. He didn't tell me how to do the act. He just said, I want a story. So we started working on it. So, as we started working, I applied to these techniques of lean and... So we're going to go through a bunch of these slides. But the first thing that I wanted to do is I wanted to have a current state. And the current state is something really, really simple that I want all of you to do with your acts. Is you get a video of your show, and you press pause and take a screenshot of what you're doing at that particular moment. And I got the idea when I was watching Gone with the Wind, and I pushed pause to go upstairs, get some popcorn, came back downstairs, and I looked at the pause moment, and I was like, this is a poster. It's beautiful. The lighting is great. I can understand what the people are doing just from a picture. And then I got, I wonder what would happen if I did that to my act. And I have no idea what I'm doing in the center picture there. But this was the act that I took to the Korean tsunami here. And it was ridiculous. I had, this act was not fleshed out at all. But I also knew that I had a starting point. So this was my current state. My future state is harder to do because I couldn't figure out what I was going to be. So I took, the only thing that I could do is I took two of my people that I look up to in magic, and that would be Lance Burton and Veronin. Lance Burton for execution and magic, and Veronin for character and acting. So that was my North Star. And as I kept on nipping away at it, we kept on working on the act and working on the act, and some other things started to occur to me, is you need to reach out for help. And if you look on the screen here, there are some people that you might know. Oscar Munoz and I, we talk to each other weekly. I don't even know how he's still friends with me after all the stuff that we've talked about, but Oscar, and then Sean Farquhar, Gene Anderson, and then this is Michael Ewan, and this is my high school drama teacher. And she's now a New York director. But the one person that I want to talk to you about is the next guy. His name is Tobin Ost. Now, Tobin Ost, he was nominated for a Tony for being the production designer for Newsies on Broadway. And he just finished up with Steven Spielberg's West Side Story as a production designer. He's from my hometown of Adrian, Michigan. He also went to Adrian High School, and there is this small little theater in my hometown called the Croswell Opera House. And I thought, well, why don't I just give this guy a call? He's from my hometown. I didn't have his phone number, but I went to his Facebook page, and I looked it up, and I just sent him a note. I said, hey, I want to be in the World Championships of Magic. I'm going to send you a video. Could you help me out? 10 minutes later, my phone rang. And he said, Stuart, this is Tobin. And I go, hi. And he said, and this is a true story. He said, Stuart, I really want to help you out. And I go, well, I can't pay you. I mean, you're a Broadway guy. There's no way. And he says, no. I really want to help you, and I want to tell you why. He said, when I was in the fifth grade, you brought me up on stage, and you did the cut and restored rope trick. You are the reason why I got into theater. You introduced me to theater. So, he and I went through this whole 3-hour conversation of what the heck is wrong with my act. Saying, why are you wearing a purple suit? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And pretty soon he said, that mirror, you have it covered with a paisley cloth. Why is it paisley? I said, it looks old-fashioned. He goes, no. What if it was like a tattered old cloth, like it was a dust cloth? Maybe it might be like an attic. Maybe it's kind of haunted. And at that moment, I saw the entire act flash before my eyes just because he's changed one element in my act. Through just asking questions. Why? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? So that was help number one. Help number two from him, he said, call Heather. Heather was the costume designer at the Croswell Opera House. She's now working in Chicago on some musical. So I contacted Heather, and she said, oh, yeah, I'd really like to help you out. Your hat is the wrong color. I saw you on Penn and Teller Fool Us. Your hat is gray, and it shouldn't be gray. It should be black. And I said, yeah, I know. But black hats tend to vanish against a black backdrop. And she said, have you ever thought of pony? And I go, pony? What do you mean? Pony. And she goes, yeah, I have some pony left over. Black pony hair. And I go, okay. And she said, I was just making a costume for Hamilton. The musical Hamilton. I said, the musical Hamilton? Yeah, I'm the costumer for Hamilton. And his coat has pony on the collar, and I have a whole bunch of it left over. Do you mind if I cover your black top hat in Pony. And I said, in Pony from
Hamilton?
And she goes, yeah. And I'll send you the picture so you know that it's real, the real deal. So the hat that you saw slide across the table is remnant from the Hamilton. Now, this is the road to FISM. I didn't plan for any of this to happen, but it's because FISM is much bigger than me and a much larger, bigger picture and a harder target to find. As I started progressing, more of these weird things happened. So we'll go down to the next slide. Let's see where we're at here. Okay. So this is the purple suit story. So purple suit, this is Tobin. He said, so why are you wearing a purple suit? And I said, because it looked great on me. And he said, no, that's... He said, your character is a magician in a store. Why would he be walking around all day in this outfit? It doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that was a $400 suit. So I went the very next day to Goodwill. I found a brown suit, this one. The entire suit, pants, tie, jacket, all of it. $8. And that was the beginning of my character, because as soon as I changed into that, I'm still doing the same stuff, but all of a sudden I'm a different person, a character. So we progress through here, and which one are we going to work on this? There's all kinds of interesting things. Oh yes, Sean Farquhar mentioned this. I got this weird phone call. I have been trying to get into the Magic Castle for 30 years with the magic of Stuart and Laurie. Never happened. And then all of a sudden, I get a call from Jack Goldfinger. And Jack said, I hear what you're doing. Todd Carr called me and he said I should give you a call. And then, so, all right. So Jack said, I'll call you later. I'm like, why did you call me? I thought you were going to book me. He's like, I'll call you later. Okay. So that's called Jackanese. Everybody who knows Jack Goldfinger, it's Jackanese. So he calls me later, literally a couple hours later. Okay, I want to book you. I took you out to okay. All right, great. Hey, I'm going to be at the Magic Castle. So then we go to the Magic Castle, and I see Sean Farquhar. And then Sean Farquhar is like, two-time world champion, and also two-time Penn & Teller Fooler. And I'm like, he's in the theater right next to me. That's fate. I'm going to talk his ear off. And he allowed it. And we were talking our ear off, and he told me, in order to get on Penn & Teller Foolish, you need a backstory. So I did this bodybuilding documentary, and I sent that into that. And I did this, and then a month later, I get a call from Penn & Teller Foolish. We want you on the show. Thank you. And it just kept going from there. And then I applied Lean and Continuous Improvement to Penn and Teller because I said, there's no way I'm going to fool those guys. So I came up with this wild idea that I was going to, 30 days before the show on Penn and Teller, I was going to do my act 100 times in 30 days, videotape it, and I was going to improve just one thing each time I videotaped my act. And at the end of 30 days, my act would be 100% better if one improvement was 1%. So when I went on Penn & Teller, that was the very first time that I'd ever done the mirror as a standalone piece. And I fooled them. And that was just the craziest moment, because from there, I went on to the combined convention, and I met my dream. I got to go to FISM. So I go to FISM, and I compete in Korea. Now, I knew that this was not going to be my only FISM, that this is the one that's like, okay, this is the dry run. Let's see what this is really all about. I knew going to Korea was going to be like going into the belly of the beast. The first guy comes out and is like, oh, okay. Second guy comes out, and he produces birds like split card fans, you know? He produces this amount of smoke. He takes a fireball. It rotates all around him. He catches the fireball, and there's a bird there. He puts him in the bird cage. And then he's just doing all this crazy stuff. And then he gestures to his birds, and they turn blood red before your eyes. And he goes like this, and then they're all gone. And the bird cage falls apart. The guy gets a standing ovation. Eric Buss is sitting next to me. He's in tears saying, "This is the greatest magic show I've ever seen in my life." And we're on the second performer. And I look at Lori and I say, "I quit." Game over. So the stage manager, when it comes my turn to perform, I always screw up his last name, but Gay Lundberg. Gay Lundberg. He walks up to me and he says, "Stuart, my 20 minutes are over." He goes, "Stuart, and I want you to remember this." He said, "Stuart, enjoy your next 10 minutes. And everything went away from me. I felt wonderful. I looked up at the spotlights and I blinked, taking pictures because I didn't have my camera. Get this moment in your head, Stuart, and enjoy the next 10 minutes. And I had a blast. I got eighth place. Nobody gives you an award for eighth place. But FISM isn't all about placing. The Olympics of magic is actually just like the Olympics itself. And the Olympics, the sports of the Olympics, if you look at the motto, it's called, "It's not the winning, but the taking part." And just because I took part in that competition and didn't win anything, I got a world tour out of it. I went to China, I went to Greece, I went to Italy. Gabe put me up on his convention, which is a beautiful convention in Sweden, and it was amazing. So let's go back to my current state and see how well I did. So remember what I looked like. And this is my current state. Taking video snapshots randomly. It's a completely different story. And it's just by working a little bit at a time on something that is bigger than you are. And the craziest thing happened that I'm going to conclude with. When I was competing in Louisville, the two gentlemen that I used as my North Star that I picked years and years and years ago, Lance Burton and Veronin, were at that show. Wow. And that's the proof. So how crazy is it that on the road to FISM, that all of these wild things that I could never have predicted happened just because I took the chance to fail, I took the chance to grow. I mean, it is the hardest thing that I've ever done. And if you can imagine 150 Artems all performing and competing for a prize, that's what FISM is. Artem is FISM. So thank you for letting me share this moment with you. And thank you, Sean. And thank you, Oscar. And thank you, Gene.
Come on, Stuart McDonald. You're awesome. Seriously awesome. That was great. Really good. Yeah, that's. And the story is just not over.
So, we are on the final day of the convention here in Atlanta, and I thought we'd kind of have just a little bit of a recap first of what happened last evening, because yesterday's podcast got to be a little bit lengthy, about an hour and a half. Hopefully you guys got a chance to listen to that, because we had some really great conversations with a lot of interesting people, just as we're having here this morning with David Girard and Tommy Ellison. Hey, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
So I want to talk a little bit about last night and then kind of the convention in general, but last night was the FISM acts, I guess, or you'd say. So what were your thoughts about last evening? Oh, it was a contest,
I think,
actually.
It was a close contest.
It
was just a contest.
The night before, was it? Okay, I'm getting
that's
confused.
Right. That's right. And you just are aware, first of all, the great variety.
Yeah.
You see all kinds of magic. You see sort of traditional things like manipulation, and then you see these amazing acts from China and other. I mean, it's astounding to see the different ways in which people approach magic.
That's a good point, because this is the International Brotherhood of Magicians, and that was no more apparent than last night. We had China and Russia.
Very much an international show.
Yeah. Tommy?
Not only that, you've had a great diversification of the female in magic, moving from the role of an assistant to the actual onstage performer, and there were several on the show last night. They were absolutely fabulous, and many of them won the big prizes and, placed in the competition and did well.
And youth, too.
The young lady that took all the prizes in the youth division, I mean, she was the one that walked out with all the bling,
right. You
know, all the money and all the trophies. And,
right.
And
what?
We had just had a lecture earlier in the day about, you know, how you think about the assistant and the role of women in magic and all that. It was very good.
She could actually buy a couple of tanks of gas with all that money.
And she was from South Africa, which was interesting, too. Again, kind of bringing in an international flair all that.
And the thing is, too, you see the influence of people like Jim Steinmeier in her act and in some others, how people have taken maybe some things that have been around for a long time and given them a new look.
Right, right. You know, that's a good point then, David, because that particular Think a Drink act of Jim's, I think he had published
in Device and Illusion.
Device and Illusion, which first appeared, I believe, in Magic Magazine even.
And he's actually working on a new edition of it that will include some photographs and things, but I mean, that hospitality is worth the price of that book.
Yeah, that was great. Speaking of which, then, of course, Alex Ramone was opening with one of Jim Steinmeier's effects, which was the iPad thing. Well, that's true.
And that was the other thing. And I had a chance. I did not know Alex. And we were both very impressed with he's an engaging.
Well, you don't listen to the podcast. I mean, if you go way back, actually, he was one of my early ones. I had an episode that we got to know each other when I was out in Lake South Lake Tahoe, and he was working there for a week, and we sat down and chatted. Interesting guy.
I just had never met him. I mean, I knew his name.
He's a ringmaster, you know, from Zing Zang
That's
Zoom.
That's right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just, but to meet him and then to hear him talk about the influences, who are also some of my influences, and it was just, he was amazing. I enjoyed, he did a great job.
Yeah. Well, and we've had some pretty good lectures and everything, too, which, by the way, I've always said, for those who are listening, if you're wanting a good lecturer, David Girard has definitely top five lectures I've heard of all time. And I'm not just saying that because you're standing here right now. Love the notes and things you have. They're all practical. They're things that are close-up, stand-up, stage. You've been on Penn & Teller Fool Us and good friends, of course, then with being from Louisville with Lance Burton and Matt King, but also just the advice and the things that you... Well, anyhow, I can go on and on about
how... And I will say Tommy's here, and Tommy has a piece in my book that's... I mean, I've been fortunate through the years to have friends like Tommy Ellison in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all do. He's a friend of the magic word. He's one of my patrons. I appreciate
you
that,
and you don't have to... I don't have to know everything in the world about, like, for example, coin magic. I just need to take my friend Ken Abbott to lunch, you know, twice a year. And so that's the benefit of an organization like the International Brotherhood of Magicians or a local magic club.
So that's why one of the reasons you're enjoying the convention.
One of the reasons. That's exactly right.
Yeah, we get a chance to kind of see people we don't get to see throughout the rest of the year and spend some little bit of quality time, even though it's short.
Get a picture with them.
Right. And then see how we all change and losing some hair or hair get gray or whatever.
Right. Color-changing hair trick.
Color-changing hair trick. And Tommy?
Well, I was kind of introduced to the thinking of Jim Steinmeier by David, and I have to remember, I took a 30-year sabbatical from magic, so when I came back in 7 or 8 years ago, it was like all is new again.
And it has changed just a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
And just like Trigg Watson was talking in the lecture just now about what's going to be happening in the future as far as virtual reality and augmented reality. I'm sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and it's been a real pleasure to read Jim's books and his thinking, and then to see people like this, like the gentleman last night, introducing Steinmeier's thinking into their routines.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm very privileged to have my name up here with David's and Jim's on David's new cracker bucket menu effect that we're coming out with
Is that going to be commercially available then?
It's just come out, and they can't get paper to print them. So the only ones that are available are the ones in my basement, you know, which is like the first 15 or 20. But
yeah. Maybe we could go virtual and put it on an iPod or something.
Again, it's just Jim being generous with ideas. But back to what Tommy said about Trig, if the direction of magic, the digital and all that kind of stuff, if it's frightening to a guy like Trig that's like, what, I don't know, 28, 29, 30 – I'm almost 70. I'll probably sit this one out, you know. Just show me a stage and give me some real people.
It's moving so quickly.
It might It's just like
go to my house and the light's still blinking on the VCR.
That's right. What's a DVD, Dad?
There's a clock on that thing.
What's a watch? But it's fun to kind of see it evolve. And to have people like Trig that aren't running from it, they're running toward it. And then the rest of us are being dragged, kicking and screaming, you know.
Who was that said earlier today also about, I run towards fear?
It was him.
It was Trig.
So I thought those, by the way, that was disappointing. We just had the presentation and talking about three different things. And we had Lance Rich talking about the history of the blooming rosebush.
What an incredible presentation. Mm-hmm. I told Lance, I said, I couldn't be prouder of you.
Well, I was at the presentation there in Austin for the Magic Collectors whenever he had then
showed that.
Well, in fact, if you saw the video, you could see me standing up. You could see me. Oh, yeah. It was amazing. Yeah, he got a standing ovation for that.
Well, I remember I met him. You know, he jokes about Kentucky, and I'm from Kentucky, and I met him, and we've just been friends through the years, but we don't spend a lot of time together. Yeah. But the convention has, created those opportunities. But just to see how well, just some of the things he's done. Mm-hmm. And especially to have our history is secure and safe with people like him. And I told him, I said, it was so much fun because I'm reading a book right now. It's called Magic by Hopkins. It's kind of a classic piece but some of the things he talked about, mm-hmm. I had cursory knowledge of, but then he just filled in a lot of the blanks and enriched the basic information that I was getting from this book that's like 100 years old, It's so much fun.
But you always wonder, though, how audiences have changed from that time frame till now, because people's attention span seems to be so much shorter that would someone sit and watch a bush bloom into roses over a 10 or 15 minute presentation.
That's true. David Goldrake was the second one who had spoken, and I just spoke with him yesterday. He's going to be coming up with a future episode, and we were talking about, because he does a underwater chain escape in his Illusionarium show in Vegas and in his tour as well, and he was talking about how in yesteryear when people would watch Houdini in the audience, and for 15 minutes he'd be behind a curtain, people just staring at a curtain. He said there's absolutely no way, even if people are in the water tank for about 2 minutes, kind of like, they look at the watch, let's keep this moving.
That's
along.
Right.
He said the tension span, he can palpably feel he's got to keep things moving.
Well, I will never forget Doug Henning's very first television special. I think it was, and he did the Houdini water torture cell. Mm-hmm. And when he was writing about it, telling about it later, he said, as I was upside down in the tank looking into the red eye of the camera, knowing that I am live on television right now, mm-hmm. he said, the thought went through my mind, more people are seeing me in this moment than ever saw Houdini in his entire lifetime.
Wow, that's kind of heavy.
And he just went,
But the closest thing that's actually replicated that is when Blaine, in the second half of his tour, held his breath underwater for X number of minutes.
He could do it up to 20 minutes, I understand.
There was a tension that built in the audience that was, I'm imagining, very similar to what people were experiencing.
He was able to capture I sat there and thought, because I've had people say, what can he possibly do in live? And I said, you need to go to his show. He is a master. He's a terrific, he can do all the moves and all that, but he's an amazing performer. He's an entertainer. Mm-hmm. And I sat there with 2,000 people at the Palace Theater in Louisville, and he had everybody in the palm of his hand, loving him.
Yes,
and I've always said that's the key. A lot of people do a lot of stuff, but they got to like you.
Yeah.
Why would anybody bring me, anywhere? Let me find somebody twice as good as I am within 100 miles. Mm. But I hope it's because maybe they like me,
Exactly.
And you just never know. But
David Blaine's soon going to be in Las Vegas at Resorts World.
Really?
And so, yeah, he's going to be having a residency there for a few months, I believe. And so people should be watching for that.
I hope people will go see him and not say, ah, you know, because it's just, I was amazed. I mean, I was completely surprised, yeah, because I've always thought he had there was a hook, an engagement about him. But I learned so much about presentation and showmanship that night. I mean, he's basically doing things that you would think, well, how are you going to play that in a 2,000-seat theater? Mm-hmm. And he had the TVs and all that kind of stuff, but still, he carried the show.
Yeah, and that's what's important. Listen, guys, thank you very much. We could sit and
thank
talk
you.
The rest of the day. And hopefully
we will with someone else. Probably,
that's right.
Maybe we should go sew our lips together.
That's right, for just a little while. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was David Gerard and Tommy Ellison. Scotty L. So we are soon going to be going in for the close-up show here this afternoon, but later on will be the gala final night party show / event. And two of the performers, I should say one group of the performers, this is difficult to kind of explain. Well, first of all, Jeff and Tessa Evans. Hey.
Tessa, good to see you.
Yeah, very good to see you, Scott.
And Jeff.
Hi, Scott.
I was going to say it's a magic show, but you guys are in a category that cannot be defined. I mean, you're not illusionists. You're not particularly mentalists. I don't consider it. I mean, it is mentalism.
We do.
Well, no. But when you're reading each other's mind, other people's minds, it's a different kind of mentalism, I guess I should say. You know, because I always think of mentalism as something of what everybody does, but you guys are not everybody. I mean, there are very few people in the world who do exactly what you do. A handful of people, obviously, because other types of mentalists, Banachek and Howard DeSilva, I don't care, whoever you want to mention, are doing other kinds of things, whether it's psychokinesis or predictions and that kind of a thing. But the kind of, I guess it is mind reading, but not mentalism. It's, you know
well,
what I'm saying?
Well, Nietzsche's second sight is what we always refer to it as. Or telepathy. Where's telepathy at?
Okay, now say telepathy is not an illusion as far as big illusions, you know, like what David Goldrake's going to be doing. There
sure.
are comedy like Jeff Hobson and that kind of a thing. Well, so it's a unique category you guys are in, a very niche kind of a thing.
It's true. And here at this magic convention, I think for the show tonight, we're going to be like the jugglers of the show.
Now, see, I think you hit right on it. That's exactly what I'm saying. You have now defined it.
The mind-reading juggler is because we're going to toss around people's thoughts, and they're going to be just as wowed as the illusions, if I can be overly confident. I think we really connect with them. And I think sometimes you may have difficulty, as people often do, but we are the mentalist duo. We coined that phrase and started the movement many years ago and sort of really got people back into second sight. You know, it's been around for centuries.
Met a few here at the conference. There's a few acts that are learning it and mixing it in with their magic act. That's the way we used to do it.
Oh, yeah.
We do illusions, come back to second sight, back to illusions.
Have you ever done any kind of instruction like that as far as getting classes and teaching? I mean, people are coming up and asking like for tips and things, I'm sure, but have you ever one-on-one done something?
Not formal classes, but we have assisted couples, a little bit one-on-one, but very light. We have plans for the future to help with programming and help.
I don't know if you're going to be aligned with Jeff McBride's school, because I know he has different kinds of things within his magic and mystery school. But
no,
nothing like that.
Reached out to us, but maybe something of that nature. We'll see. You never know where it goes, Scott. We have ideas and dreams, you know, and all of us do, and you never know where it leads you to.
That's right. Well, after the pandemic is over, now things are opening up, and you're starting to hit the road and go around the world again, I guess? Or?
Well, nothing's been other than Canada and the U.S. so far, but we're back on the road.
Yeah.
So
well,
not to what it was.
Canada.
Right.
We're lucky. It's been pretty tight, you know, getting in and out of that country. I mean, they weren't letting people across the border, you know.
Well, we have good fortune because we're dual citizens.
Oh, that's true.
When we would cross the border over the last 2 years, there were times, well, most times, nobody at the border crossing back to the U.S. And they would come out and stop us and say, how did you get into Canada? Because we have U.S. tags in our vehicle and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, because really, for a long time, you couldn't get into Canada.
That's my
unless
point.
You were a citizen. But we were able to go back and forth. We'd have to quarantine 2 weeks when we got there. So
really?
We didn't do it too often. Yeah, we stayed there for most of the pandemic.
Now, when you were quarantined, did you have to actually, were you able to go home or did you have to go to a hotel?
No, you go home, but you couldn't leave the property in the beginning for 2 weeks. But that's long gone. But you had to stock up on food, bring food with you, and I think they were discouraging traveling. That's the idea.
I believe as time progresses, I was just talking with someone a moment ago about how in the future, very near future, we'll be saying, well, was that pre-COVID or post-COVID?
I think that's true. Oh. I mean, it's hard to know for sure. And it just feels like it's going to be around for quite a while.
Kind of like an unfortunately 9/11. Was this before 9/11 or after 9/11?
Yes. You know, it's just a kind of a marker in history. Yes.
A vision in time.
Right.
And I think it's really, in some ways, more traumatic than September 11th because it's affected everybody around the world. Yeah. So it's a world historical marker.
That's right. Yeah. That's very true. Well, about the convention, you guys have been enjoying the convention here so far?
Just loving it. I mean, the 100th year. This is just incredible.
This is our first time at an IBM convention in the U.S. We've done
Quebec before, right?
In the
Quebec? I don't remember where that was last time. We had in Canada once, but I don't remember where that was.
I don't think we did an IBM in Canada, did we? We did Magie Montreal.
We didn't perform it at IBM, but I thought someone recently said that there was one in Quebec City.
Yeah, but we weren't there.
No, we weren't there. Oh, yeah, but there was an IBM.
But this is the first IBM convention you've been to.
In the U.S.
In the U.S.,
We did one in England, in Eastbourne.
Oh, Eastbourne, correct.
Quite a number of years ago.
Yeah. Okay. And so this has to be a little bit different experience because, like, when I've seen you before, like at the Mindvention, a little bit different kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Obviously. And but this is different. Have you, and I've seen you also at some other conventions, but this being a national convention, you've been at an SAM convention?
We did.
Milwaukee, I think.
Well, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Do you like doing conventions and getting a chance to kind of meet magicians? And
love it.
Of course, because, you know, our background is magic, the majority of our friends are magicians. And as we all know, when we're busy working, and of course, unfortunately for the pandemic, we haven't connected with people in person for a long time. So the convention is the place to do it.
This is the place. And so during the pandemic, real quickly, and I'll kind of let you go, but what were you doing during the last 2 years? Because we've been... Your act, I would think, would be something also you could do over Zoom, I guess?
We did a lot of Zoom shows. We had it took us a few months, but we eventually had 4-camera set up at a studio. We took a lot of classes, still taking classes, still learning, and evolving. Maybe it's coming back. Who knows? We have some virtual shows coming up. We loved it.
Oh, yeah. It was a great, great experience and a great way to perform.
I was wondering about that as far as corporate shows go, if some companies in the future will continue to do that. In other words, we have a big investment of money and time and learning and then buying the equipment. And, like, you just can't say, okay, I'm putting that in the garage and moving on, you know, because that's a lot of money just to put away.
We'll see.
I don't think it's going to change. I think it's going to continue for the long term.
Maybe for holiday parties, they saved a lot of money by doing it virtually. It wasn't as fun for the employees, and a lot of them will go back. But
they don't have to drink and drive.
Right. There's a lot of benefits to it, isn't there? Yeah. So who knows? I think we'll see more of them in the fall. And that seems to be the feeling out there. So,
any other conventions, magic and wise, that you are booked for in the year or two?
Not magic conventions. We're doing Dickens. That's our next Dickens in Maryland. We'll be there.
That's Rich Block's Theater?
Yeah.
Yes,
his new
brand new theater. Yes.
We can't wait. So we did the old theater a number of times.
I didn't know he had a new theater. Wait. So what did this?
The old one is gone. Okay. And he built from the ground up. And it looks very impressive online. So we'll see it in person. John Stetson was there this week. He just wrapped up. So he's got a lot of magicians, mentalists, everybody coming in.
Is that a much larger theater as far as the how many people it will hold?
It's bigger. It's larger. But I don't think it's, you know, seeing the photos, it doesn't look like it's huge. Okay. Hard to know how many seats. I don't know.
Was it before? Like 70 or something? Or how
many?
I think just under 70.
Yeah, it was about that.
It was an old garage that he added on to and built. It was quite impressive. Were you ever there?
I haven't been there.
Oh, it's beautiful. The old one was lovely.
It was surprising when you opened that door. So magical. But, you know, that is the magic of Rich Block. And that man has energy that would take a few of us to keep up
and
with.
Sue, his wife.
They're a dynamic couple.
The most impressive couple, I think. We know we've talked about that on the way
here.
They're just unbelievable, what they've accomplished in their life. Incredible.
If people want to be impressed by them, just go to Dickens' website and see the little story about how they met and what they've done in their lives, and it will just blow you away. And you just would want to meet them, and you'd want to go to the show or be on the stage if you're an entertainer. So, I'm serious. Yeah. Okay, Rich, when I see you, you're going to give me payback.
Me and Sue are just a great couple, I have to agree. You know, I had spent some time with them out in Washington D.C. Some years ago, back when Le Grand David still had their show up in Salem.
What a great show that was.
And Nick Ruggiero is still alive and was working with Rich. But the two of them are great. And at the time, Sue was still teaching, I think, at Georgetown. She's teaching law.
Yeah, I believe she still is. I think so.
Yeah. Anyhow, great couple. You know, a lot of energy and everything. I haven't seen him in a while because he used to attend the IBM frequently and was a regular host, like on the evening. I think on the contest shows in particular.
Yeah, and he produced the World Magic Seminars, and he was instrumental in us coming to the USA. I think
Absolutely.
Rich is the reason why. Okay. I think we can say that.
We can definitely say that. Yes, he's the one.
Rich, you're the guy, Rich.
Yeah. All right.
Well, listen, thank you guys very much. Appreciate your time. Good luck tonight. I don't know. You don't need it. I just want to say I'm looking forward to seeing the show as the rest of the group who is all here.
Well, it's great seeing you, Scott.
One more thing, Scott. Yeah. Please say break a leg.
Please break a leg.
Thank you. We're superstitious. What can I say?
Okay. I usually say break a thread. You know. Break a leg.
That's what I know.
Break a blindfold.
Break a blindfold. You can do that one.
Yeah.
That's great.
Always
a pleasure.
May your Velcro come unloose.
Careful now.
Yeah, I don't want to have a costume slip.
That's a whole different thing, yeah. All right, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Seth and Jeff Evison. Scotty F. So I want to get just a couple of other ideas and reflections on what we've been doing here at the convention from someone who actually is a director, curator, what the heck are you, Jeffrey Allen. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hello. I'm on the board of directors for the museum, the American Museum of Magic in Marshall, Michigan.
There we go.
I'm also on the board of trustees for the IBM.
As well, which is another good reason, which is why you're walking around in coat and tie. Not
pretending
just
to be in charge. No, okay. Pretending to be somebody.
Right. And also have then with me Jeffrey's assistant, Angelina. Hello, Angelina. It's Angel again.
Angel. Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. I'm doing great. What are your thoughts? What do you think about the convention? You've been having a good time so far?
I've been having a great time. Everybody is great on stage. Everything is fun. Comedy's funny. And I'm having a great experience.
Now, I was about to ask because I always like to talk to someone who is having a first-time experience. And this is your first Magic convention or first IBM convention?
First IBM convention.
Well, that's right. You've been to the, of course, to the Abbott's.
Yes, Abbott's, yep.
But this is a little bit larger, a completely different kind of a vibe.
Completely different, but it's still fun. Like, it's completely still fun, but different vibe, still fun. Abbott's is a different vibe, and that was my first time last year, and it was amazing. And I can't wait to go again this year.
So what is it about this convention that would make you want to come back then again?
I like traveling, so it gave me a way to travel and just being able to see different faces and same people that I saw and met last year. That was pretty cool. And we just get to talk and, you know, see more things as well, people you didn't get to see and, you know, things you didn't get to see, you get to see now. And so that's pretty cool. It's a little different.
Good point. And Jeffrey, because you were on the board, I'll ask you this question. And when they were talking about, you were not on the committee necessarily, in the planning committee for this convention, so you really may not be able to answer this, but I'm curious about their having a lot more time in between than we have in the past. Have you noticed that? It seems like that we've got a little bit more downtime than we've had in the past.
I have, and I kind of like it.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah. I haven't heard many people complaining, but there have been people who have noticed and mentioned that to me as well.
Well, this is a lot better. You know, we're always in a hurry to get to the next lecture,
and we never get
there's
time.
Never a chance to talk or share secrets, and then we end up staying up all night as a result, and it's better this way to have a little more time in between the afternoon sessions.
And so what have you seen or learned or bought or you think is exciting about this convention so far?
I'm like everyone else. You keep circling the wagon, and then you eventually, you know, you drop your money on something, you know. So I'm still watching. It's the dealer room is still, even though a lot of things have been sold, there's still some robust things. And I tend to look at the more obscure pieces and therefore, I have a better chance that they'll still be here.
Yeah, after we're finished, I'm going to show you. I bought a little obscure piece then. I've got in my bag with me. I have likewise kind of walked through a few times and talked to people and have seen some of the demos. But there was something first time caught me, and I thought, I've not seen this this variation before. It's very cool.
Did you see the bottle opener from Phantasma, the Houdini bottle opener.
I got it in my pocket.
Okay, yeah. I got one of those, too. That's the kind of unique piece.
I've got the mug already at home, and the bottle opener looks like that Houdini mug, and that's why I thought I got to have a companion piece now.
Yeah, mine will end up in the museum. But
I was thinking about the brick. Did you see the Houdini bricks?
Yeah, we also received one of those from Barry Spector this year.
Okay.
The brick, the wand. Now we have a brick from Houdini's house.
Right.
Houdini's, the hospital where Houdini died.
Wow.
And we also have a brick from the Garrick Theater in a museum where he was performing before he went to the hospital in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, okay. That settles because I was thinking about buying a brick, but I won't be able to have a complete set like you guys do.
That's right.
I feel like my collection is incomplete if I just have a brick.
Somebody said they had another brick from somewhere that they wanted to trade because we do have a handful of bricks from the hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, Bob Lund, the founder of the museum's wife, was born a week after Houdini died there. In the Grace Hospital in Detroit.
Mm. Wow. I think I've heard that story. I think you may have told me that, but that rings a bell with me. Over there. Well, I think it's been great from the very beginning. Did you happen to see Mario the Maker's show with an angel?
I did not. I missed it.
Did you get here late a little bit? No. When did you get to Wednesday, or you just missed the show?
No, I just missed the show, yeah. It was a lot, so I just missed the show.
I think that was, it was kicked off apparently by David Ginn's lecture. He had a lecture on the first day, and for people who had arrived early, I was not one of them. But I did get a chance to sit down with him and record an episode. It'll be an extended podcast later. But
Mario's origins are Grand Rapids, Michigan. He worked at a magic shop there.
You got to bring back Michigan into this all the time, don't you? Okay.
But it's true. When he was at the newest convention, the Wonder Bash, Trino's Wonder Bash, Mario came in, and the couple that had a magic shop one time in Grand Rapids, Hippity Hop Magic Shop, were there, and Mario gave them a shout-out and thanked them for getting him started in magic, if you can imagine that. So we can all look back at who we consider our first magician or whatever that sparked us, and that was his, and he worked at their shop for a little bit.
Well, Michigan does have a rich history of magicians who have come, and Ohio is another one.
And Texas.
Well, I'm of course going to say Texas, yeah. I mean, every state can pretty much say we have a magician or some magicians who have come from here, but I think that the few we mentioned, I think, are some that are notable in particular.
Yeah. Well, you know, Zany Blaney for Texas.
Mark Wilson, Bev Bergeron.
Those are our legends, our heroes that we look at.
Yep. And it's good that you're honoring that and continuing George Lund's, what's his wife's name?
Bob and Elaine Lund.
Bob and George. Bob and Elaine Lund, tradition of doing that.
Right, and you got a tour with Bob one time.
I did. That was awesome. Well, listen, thank you guys very much. Appreciate the reflections a little bit on that. We got a lot more to go here this afternoon, this evening, so we'll see you on down the road.
See you again. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks again. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Angelina and then Jeffrey Allen. Scotty out. One of the people who is part of the talent for the evening show, the gala show, is Trigg Watson. He's here with me right now. Hey there, Trigg. How you doing, man?
Hey, Scott. I'm done. I am done. It has been
finally.
been working all convention. I feel like now I can relax.
Now, yes, you can. But the problem is that it was the last night because it's hard to. Well, it's easy to relax then right now, but you've been tense like leading up to this.
Yeah, and now I have to pack. This is the life.
And then heading out. You know, that's why it's always best to be on the first night, so this way you can relax and
that
just kind of
chill.
That
would have been nice. That would have been nice.
But there were so many things, because you had two bits you kind of had to prepare for tonight.
Yeah, well, I got to speak at the teen weekend kids earlier in the convention, which is something that I went through when I was a kid, so it was really cool to do that. Mm-hmm. And then, I got to do a little TED Talk-style presentation this morning, and then, of course, was in the show tonight, so it's been a lot.
So the things that you did then for the teens, was that just about marketing or about tricks in particular, or what did you talk with them about?
Yeah, I'm not in a position to disclose what goes on during... No, I'm kidding.
I'm trying to encourage people to actually sign up and go to the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we were given free rein to talk about anything we like, but Lance didn't want any you know, just sort of general motivation, I'll follow your dreams kind of stuff. He wanted us to really share practical information. Yeah. So, for example, I shared how I write a cue sheet for when I enter a theater and I need to, you know, communicate what I need in my show for a light person, a sound person, a curtain, you know, curtain operator. You know, I shared my format for how to do that. Mm-hmm. I talked about how I kind of used my college career, college campus and high school resources to further my magic career. So, you know, really trying to come up with, you know, practical stuff that would have been useful for me to know when I was, you know, younger.
And that was also a very interesting talk that you gave then this morning as well, and talking about the future and what's going to be happening. And so I liked your comment about I run towards fear.
Yeah. I mean,
think we have to embrace it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, as magicians, it's our job to do impossible things, and the world is getting more and more magical as we speak. And I feel like sometimes it's easy to feel like in our heart that we're going to run out of, like, all right, if we can now read people's minds through, you know, some being hooked up to some machine, well, there goes mentalism. Like, where's our job? We're losing a job, you know? So figuring out, you know, I think for me, I just like to lean into that. I'm like, all right, let me learn about the technology out there that, you know, sometimes feels like it's going to, you know, kill a certain genre of magic, and see, okay, how can we leverage this, you know, and lean into that. And we might be surprised with what comes out. And because the truth is, magicians have always stayed ahead. We found a way to ride that curve, even if it feels like we're not going to be able to. We always find a way.
Well, just as we have during lockdown, where we've been able to access Zoom, and you don't, you think about, you need to have a real person to pick a card. Well, you don't need to have a physical person there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's other ways to create enough credibility and conviction among the audience that what's happening is really happening for them in real time using other methods.
Right. So this has been a great convention. Yeah. And we've had just a lot of diversity here as far as youth and older people with experience, and then some younger people here for the first time performing, as well as just great professional shows, I think, and the lectures and the stage contests and the giving away the gold medal.
Yes.
That means a lot. I thought that guy was amazing.
I agreed. Yeah, incredible.
Yeah. So are you going to be competing in at FISM this year? Or
no, but when I got invited to perform at IBM, I decided, you know, three conventions in 1 year feels a little self-indulgent. So I decided to do Magic Live. I got booked for IBM, and I decided to hold out on FISM this year. Just
and
because
they come to TAOM?
I don't have plans to be at TAOM. Okay. See, now I've got to go work on new material so that I can someone can pay me to show up at a convention.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Next time. That's right. Yeah. Well, Trigg, very good to seeing you as well. And congratulations on everything that's going on with your career. It was
Thank
good
you.
Seeing you there, of course, at the Masters of Illusion. Which,
yes.
That's going to be season 9 coming up before long.
Yes. I think later in the year or early next year we'll get to see that.
Right. Me, so. And I'll be posting that. Those two episodes, actually, about that. Then later, as we get a little bit closer, in which we talk about this and stuff there, too. So always good seeing you. Congratulations.
Likewise.
And good luck, and I'll be seeing you down the road.
Thank you, Scott.
From the Magic Word Podcast, that was Trigg Watson. Scotty out.
Over and out.
We are about to give a wrap-up over here of this convention, and I thought it would be great if we had a chance to talk with someone who has actually been a convention chairman and has done a lot of his own conventions outside of the IBM, including even a couple of magic cruises. Here he is, David Sandy. Hey, David.
Scott, it's great to see you. Great to be with you. That's one of the great things about attending a convention, aside from the convention programming activities, we get to see a lot of friends, and we get to reconnect.
And make new friends. This, I have talked to so many people who have said, I've made so many new friends at this convention.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I have enjoyed about this convention, it has been a different convention. You know, we're not in a theater for the evening shows. You know, that has advantages, that has disadvantages. But one of the things I really did enjoy about this convention, I felt like we got a mix of some acts that were legendary or classics. We got to see the incredible Evisons this evening.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the truly one of the best in the business
Premier.
When it comes to absolutely. And we got to see some new acts and some acts that I had heard of but never really got to see in person.
And a gold medal.
And the gold medal. And I was lucky enough to be asked to be a judge for the gold medal competition. And one of the exciting things about when the judges went to convene after the contest to talk about the awards, it was unanimous. Every single judge said, we have a gold medal winner. It wasn't that no one, anyone had to be convinced. Artem, he had the theater, he had the skill, he had the presentation, he had the routine, he had the look. I mean,
it was flawless.
It was flawless. It looked like he came right out of a Cirque du Soleil type of a show.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was really a class act, and it was well earned, well deserved, and I was just proud to be one of the judges who was able to award him that honor.
I was one of the judges that was in the preliminary in order to send the finalists on forward.
Yes.
And as soon as we convened also, knowing that you guys were going to be the ones, or I didn't know at the time who was going to be there, but right. I think we were unanimous to first saying, there was a gold medal act there today.
Yes, unless he really would have messed it up on that final show.
Across, I thought there are a couple of places that could go wrong, and they were great.
Yeah, it was really good. And, you know, this... Go ahead.
I was going to say, as far as like the Wushan, I think they, I saw them in the preliminary, and they were phenomenal, but that evening, apparently, they couldn't use pyro.
Right.
And there was a lot of pyro in their show to begin with. And it made a world of difference. And they had to make some last-minute adjustments. Their show was still great, but the pyro just kicked it up 50% more. And right. by taking that out, it was...
And see, I didn't see them in the preliminary competition. So the first time I saw their act was when they were in the gold medal competition. And, you know, in the when the judges were conferring and talking about... You know, the other places, you know, when I learned that they had to make these literally 11th hour changes and modifications to the act because they had to remove a lot of the theatrics, i.e. pyrotechnics from the show, and they still pulled it off with a great storyline, great visuals, great costume, great routining. You know, it was that's a sign of a pro.
It really is. And that was a Juliana Chen, wasn't it? Act that she worked with them?
I don't know.
I think so.
It was good to see Juliana tonight do something that I hadn't seen her
those
do.
Those floating linking rings.
Yes.
There was a guy sitting next to me who had never seen floating linking rings, and I've never seen somebody's
eyes. We're not
eyes.
Talking the magazines
no.
either, right?
Although we got enough of them to float a boat.
Yes, exactly. I think every magician's got a garage full of them, you know.
Waiting to sell them.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go back and look through that, because I remember in 1968, there was a great one-man parade.
They rank right up there next to VHS tapes.
Yeah, there you go. And the betas along as well.
What's a beta, Scott?
Well, do you remember the laser discs? It was right around that time.
So I'm just curious. You are interviewing so many people for the Magic Word podcast. What was some of your highlights of the convention? Not that I want to turn the tables and interview you. What were some of your highlights of this convention?
Unquestionably, Mario the Maker.
Yes.
Whenever that he kicked off the convention, and that's not fair to say kickoff, because there was something on the first day with David Ginn for the early arrivers,
right.
I guess, if that's a word, arrivers?
Early arrivals. Sure, I think that's what they technically call it.
But the next day, when it was the first full day, if you will, on Wednesday, his was the first show, if you will, and the energy he has. I've seen Mario several times, and I can see why that David Blaine had selected him to open for him, even though it's kind of yin and yang. It's like, ooh, David Blaine, and he's a kid show, and but it was perfect union. And we talked a little bit about that. Unfortunately, that for those of you on the podcast who are listeners, you would have to go back and listen to one of the episodes I had exclusively with Mario a few years ago when he was at the TAOM in Houston. But I did have him on Magic and Martinis Thursday. He stopped by the bar, and we chatted for about 15 minutes, and we talked about David Blaine and all that. So that's available on Facebook and also on YouTube if you want to watch that video and listen to what he had to say there as well. But for my money, I really think that Mario knocked out of the park. It's just the way that he interacts with the audience, and not just with kids but with adults as well, and has people chanting, and you can't possibly go to sleep. It's a rock concert for kids.
It
you know?
Really is. For families.
Well,
it's one of those things that the families enjoy just as much as the kids. And I had seen Mario, I think I saw him first at Magi Fest a number of years ago, and he really
that's
knocks
right. I was
it
with
out
you. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
they brought all those kids in the bus or something.
Yeah. So what else?
I thought that Alex's presentation, Alex Hilshi, who was the the lady who's on the cover of Vanish magazine here this month, who is a street magician, gave a little talk yesterday, and she was talking about she was very nervous coming into and talking about this because usually she's performing, but you know, talking about her life and everything. And she has just a fascinating background and a very interesting career. And I heard a lot of other people saying that that was really interesting to know more about her. She's pretty phenomenal.
You know, one of the things I noticed about this particular IBM convention compared to previous, because I have not been involved in the IBM convention for 11 years. 2011 in Dallas, Texas was the last IBM convention I chaired.
Yeah, you chaired that, and that was a big one. That was great.
That was great. The feedback was great. We had over 800 people there. It was a wonderful convention. But I noticed that we had fewer lectures, teaching magic lectures here. Mm-hmm. We had a TED Talk style thing. We had discussions, history. But, you know, we're at a lot of magic conventions. Anything that's in a general session is usually someone, a magician, doing their lecture. Because there was at a time, for those of us who've produced magic conventions, that when you hire talent to come in and be on your show or perform close-up, you know, giving them the opportunity to lecture is a potential revenue opportunity for them, because then they can sell their notes and things like that.
Right.
At this particular convention, correct me if I'm wrong, but David Genn did the early bird lecture. We had the one trick lectures, which, you know, like Joe Turner and others just taught one trick.
But they weren't selling notes.
No, but there were Were there any other actual lectures?
Now that you mentioned it, I do not remember seeing a lecture table after someone was finished talking saying, hey, I got merch over here at all. David was the only one. He's got something in the dealer's room. That's a good point. That is different. And we did have a lot more time scheduled between activities.
Yes.
So as we have an aging population, we got time for naps, but also more time
and
for visiting.
Some of our members to recharge
their scooters.
Their scooters. We shouldn't laugh about that. And I, Scott, it's not going to be that much longer.
Yeah, almost there. Almost there. Don't push me. Well, actually, I do. Could use push.
Yes. But, I enjoyed the free time, you know. I enjoyed the downtime just to hang with friends. Because, you know, when you and I were young going to our first conventions, I bet you were like me. You didn't miss an event.
Nor a session at night. Right. I mean, I was
exactly. I mean, it was magic from sun up to sundown, learning, gleaning. But now we go to conventions, we see the programming, but we also go to hang with our friends and reconnect with friends. And so it's nice to have some of that downtime to do that.
And it was nice that they had a schedule like that. As far as the location of this, we've talked about this on a few other people on the podcast, and I think the hotel was excellent, nice, close to the airport, which has a disadvantage from the standpoint you're not near a shopping center for some families who might want to go to the movies or if they want to do whatever. It's not convenient to a lot of dining around here. You know. That's only a disadvantage. Everything else, I think, was pretty good, and the staff was very helpful as well.
Right.
Tonight's show, I wanted to run over that then a little bit then as well. Raphael was the MC, and he's from he's from Belgium, and did just a great job with a lot of bits in between. That was a lot of fun. And
it's nice to see other performers take classics like his chapeau routine, you know, who we've seen, you know, the Gene Andersons and Jay Marshall. All these people do it. And it's just nice to see variations, and it just shows that, you know, something that's, you know, decades old still can be very entertaining.
Just like you said with Julianne Chen with the Linking Rings, as we hadn't seen very often. I've seen Kristen Lambert and a few other perhaps, you know, who have done that with the kind of floating rings. Mm-hmm. But before I forget it, by the way, one other thing that was a highlight for me, as we said about the gold medal being given, but that guy, Artem, he just, it knocked me out. I mean, that is a memorable act. You know,
I was in a social setting with him last night, you know, in a hospitality area, and the way he could move his head on his neck. Mm-hmm. It almost looked like I can't do that.
Serpentine.
You know? And I said, how do you do that? And he did it several times. I cannot get my, it's just very.
Maybe that's a mind trading or something.
Yeah. I hope people who are listening to this can go to YouTube and find some video clips of him, because he's just you're going to see a lot of him.
I think he's a name on the horizon. People are going to be noticed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going back then, okay, finishing up with the show, then Juliana Chan was there. Trig Watson came not once, but he had a couple of things and talking about or performing. Yeah. Next generation tech things, you know,
yeah,
coming in with.
Did you see his talk today?
I did.
Yeah, and he—that's really an area of magic that I have no experience in. I really, you know, haven't even had the desire to investigate it. But it's one of those things. I mean, he's young. He has a technical mind, and it's something that's very, very now. Right. You know, you're going to see a lot of this. We are seeing a lot of this stuff online and in social media and all this. Well, and it's just pretty amazing to watch it live.
I'm curious to see what or hear what Lance would have to say, because Lance is Mr. Zoom man. I mean, when you guys have been doing your phenomenal collectors thing that have kept us sane throughout this. I mean, my thing with Magic Martinis Thursday has been a completely different kind of a thing. People have said that's helped kept me sane, just to kind of hang out, but to actually learn something. And the speakers you guys arrange, and of course Lance is the one who's the wizard behind the curtain, pulling the levers and pushing the switches.
I'm just the pretty face.
You are the pretty face. You can say, Lance, could you please do that?
So. Yeah, I'm like James T. Kirk. I get to sit in the chair.
Yes,
And I'm not even a Trekkie, so you're lucky I pulled that name out of my head.
You remember Kirk,
Yes, but tonight's show, you know, Trig did some great things. Raphael was good. Juliana, I got to see her do something that we don't see, and you know.
And Goldrake did a great job of finishing.
David Goldrake, he's a pro. And I enjoyed listening to his talk today where it, you know, a lot of people think that the Las Vegas environment, you know, you go in, a casino hires you, and no.
Magically,
you put everything on the line. As you know, I produced shows in Branson for years, and none of those theaters down there hire the shows or hire the acts. You're renting the theater space, you're paying for all your advertising, and that's the way it works in Las Vegas too. You know, there's been that evolution, you know, over the last several decades of how entertainment works. And David Goldrake was very open about that. He said, "This is how it works, you know, and this is what you have to do." Really, by the time you walk on stage, you know, all the hard work is done. You know, all the real work behind the scenes of, you know, getting the butts in seats, you know, and everything that needs to happen.
I think that's what he said when they went in to begin with. They had a 315-page business plan and a 14-page plan for the Magic.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So it was good to hear that kind of information. There was a lot of a good variety of information here at the convention. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people have been a little out of practice, you know, of producing conventions, and, you know, newer people involved. You know, every convention's going to have its hiccup here and there, which, you know, was no different here. But, you know, the folks who attended, I feel like were very forgiving of any of these things, and they looked past it, and they just were here to have a good time, and they made the best, you know, of any situation. We had a good representation of dealers. And, you know, I bought some things. I missed a few things today, convention-wise, because a Potter and Potter auction was going on today. Yeah. So I kept running back and forth to my room, you know.
You're competing against David Copperfield, because he was saying last evening, tomorrow morning I'm going to be there.
And I will tell you, you know, you've probably already talked about this, David Copperfield was a great, even though he was here virtually, he brought so much to this particular convention.
He did.
Because he was himself, he was sitting there, he could see the audience, he could see the attendees, we could see him, and he interacted, and he gave a lot of folks an incredible inside peek of what his incredible collection looks like, people that had not, have not had the opportunity to see it before. And he was a wonderful, wonderful asset to this convention. And I know, as a board member of the IBM is very proud and honored to be able to bestow upon him this greatest of all time award. Mm-hmm. The GOAT Award.
Yeah.
It's still
kind of
this GOAT acronym still, you know, is hard for me to get past. But, you know, I guess that shows my age. It's a thing. Don't know. I'd never heard of the GOAT before. You
haven't? A big thing in sports.
Yeah.
You know, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, you know.
I'm not a sports guy. So actually, David called me, you know, 6 months ago and said, you know, asked me what I thought about this. He said, do you know what a GOAT is? And I said, yeah, I grew up on a farm. I know what a GOAT is. And he said, no, like an award. I said, no, I have no idea what. And he told me, and
first time he'd heard it.
Yeah, first time I'd heard it.
Funny.
And then, you know, he said, you know, that the IBM wants to bestow upon me the GOAT Award. And I thought he was setting me up for
you, were just laughing on the phone, saying, okay, what's the rest of this?
Yeah, but no, it's a great title. And the stuff that he gave out, I mean, the fact that everyone, every attendee of this convention got to go home with a finally quality poster, you know, I mean, on heavy stock, you know, and the IBM was thoughtful enough to provide round cardboard tubes so you could actually roll it up and get it home without damaging it. There were a lot of little things like that.
And the coins.
Yeah, and the coins, yeah. And every night we got something special.
Back of cards, and then tonight we got then the insurance policy thing. Yeah, every night, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was given, and this was limited to just 500 people. So a lot of people, are going to say, well, how do I get one of those? Well, we should have been at the convention.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we hope people will register for Pittsburgh next year. So you'll be there, right?
I've already registered.
Yep. All right.
I'm going to be there for sure. How will we seeing you there?
We will be
David,
there.
David, it's always good seeing you, my friend.
Good to see you, Scott. Thanks so much.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was David Sandy. This is Scotty out. And that's a wrap from from Atlanta, Georgia. I said I wasn't going to say Hotlanta, so I'm not.